This month is brought to you by the Ghoulish Knights of Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. Without them and their decision to support the show financially, we would not be here today producing this content. If you would like to have your name shouted out on next month's theme, or just simply want to support us, head over to patreon.com/nightlightpod to learn more. A very special shout out goes to Jasmine, Sherry, Michelle, Alondra, Allie, Taya, Alyssa, Allison, also known as Stormy Knight, also known as our community manager, James, Kate, Kayla, Philip, Zachary, Nashia, Frank, Vaughn, Johnny, Layla, Eric, Kelly, Daniel, C, also known as T with Knight, also known as our social media and marketing manager, David, also known as Knightly, Carrie, Anna, Drew, also known as the Silent Knight, Patrick, Jessica, Chantal, Jesse, Joe, Kaylee, Rob, and Freddie. Don't forget your nightlight and enjoy the show.
Take this. You need it. As you traverse through scenes of inexplicable horrors. But don't worry. There's a couple of brave knights to assist you ghouls in the afterlife. Your tour guides, Prince and Freddy, will ensure you don't leave with any missing limbs, demonically possessed, stalked by a masked killer, or devoured by cannibals. So, hit the lights, sit back, and let the darkness envelop you as we welcome you to Nightlight, a horror movie podcast.
I'm Prince, also known as Head Knight.
And I'm Freddy, also known as Nighty Knight.
And this is Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. But we are not alone, folks. As mentioned previously, we are going to actually be doing this whole entire month with a guest, which is fantastic. So I don't even really want to call it a guest. I feel like another host is the better way to say it, because this is going to be four episodes proper, and we are joined by none other than Shelby Novak from Scare You to Sleep. Hello!
Woo-hoo! Hello! You've already heard my voice.
You have.
Yes.
She's also our ritualist as well.
That lady.
It's her, the pointing fingers. Thank you so much for joining. This is honestly something that we've been kind of in the works for a little bit now, and I'm happy that we're able to actually finally do it. It's going to be a lot of fun, so I'm really, really, really excited.
I'm very excited. You chose me for this particular month of movies, because I have not seen many of them, and it's a genre that I have not delved into, like, at all.
I love it.
Yeah, I'm very excited because it's one of my favorite portions of genres. Like, I know a lot of people love slashers and things like that. I'm a huge home invasion horror film fan. But by the way, everybody, we're talking about horror invasion films. Like, oh my gosh, this is what we're talking about. But this month is going to be coined, "The Call is Coming from Inside the House." How original, Prince. Shut up. But the first film we are going to be talking about is French extremity film, Them, from 2006. I feel like this film's not discussed a lot when we are discussing new French extremity too often. So first and foremost, everybody, thoughts?
Shelby, you could go. Please go first. I'm really curious about your thoughts first, and I'll bounce off them.
Okay, so for one, I was a little bit nervous going into this month because, I mean, there's a reason I don't watch a lot of home invasion, because it makes me nervous. And
it's pretty scary.
It's very scary, but this one I did not, it was very enjoyable. It wasn't as like existential as I thought it would be, just like, yeah. I don't know, but in a good way. Like, I was really interested in the story as a story, and I know it's based on a true story and all that stuff, but it was very like, almost like fairy tale-ish to me, if that makes any sense, just because there's like some kind of whimsy and like, I mean, we'll get into it, but I feel like there's some like lessons learned almost about some of the little comments she makes in the beginning about the students. And I feel like there's like some things that like come back around. Not that anyone deserved any sort of revenge in this movie who got, but still. And then like the lesson of like the bad teenager at the beginning who wouldn't answer the phone and talk to her dad. And like, it's like, I felt like weirdly there were little like parables in here, but like terrible. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I can see that.
Don't be mean to your mom. Don't say mean things about your students. Like,
it's very much like PSA driven for sure. Yeah. Like kind of like Sunday cartoons or something, like very PSA driven.
A little bit. Maybe I got that vibe too because it was filmed in, you know, 2006, and like that took me back to those days for me. And I was right. Like, yeah, this feels like, I guess that was around the, that's teens. What I was thinking when I saw the teenage scene. I was like, yeah. Oh my God, I was the same age at this time. And I was a shitty teenager. And here's a shitty teenager. And like, don't be mean to your mom, shitty teenager.
I mean, it's Freddie, I want to hear your thoughts because this was also your first time watching this too. I've actually seen this like about four times now. So like I'm pretty well versed with this. So I want you to actually your first experience too.
I'm kind of like on the same boat with Shelby, is that I don't really like home invasion movies because sometimes that's a little too real.
Yeah.
This is something that could happen to anyone. Obviously, we always talk about The Strangers and other movies like that. And I've seen movies like this before. Sure. Hush is literally one of my favorite movies.
Oh, Hush is
Mike Flanagan. Mwah. With this movie, I knew it was a French extremity horror. So when you told me that, I was like, oh, fuck. Prince did it again. He's going to push my limits right on. It's like,
wait until next week.
Put my seatbelt on. I'm in my car watching it. I don't know why. I'm just put my seatbelt on. Like, I'm here for the ride. But you know what? This movie is inspiring, and not in the way that I'm going to break into someone's house and kill people, but inspiring in that it seems like a very low-budget movie, and it's super well-crafted. I do have to give major props to the filmmakers in this, and the acting is pretty on par too. Like, everything is very clean cut. It feels very real because everything's not super shiny and glamorous. It feels gritty, grounded, and feels very personal, right? You're following this couple around, and it just feels like a day in the life, and then shit goes wrong. Even the opening scene is pretty effective. It's really well done, well crafted. They have a great sense of suspense and a lot of thrills in it as well. And then when it gets there, it goes there. Like the whole keyhole scene got me from surprise. Yeah. And I loved it. So I have to say, I love this movie, but I don't see myself watching this again.
Sure. Because
for me, again, it's still a little too intense and a little too real. Yeah. But I really did enjoy this movie. I gave like a very high rating. It's fun. It's crazy. And of course, with French Extremity, it pushes my limits, and I'm all here for it. And I can't wait to discuss about it because there's a lot of great things about this movie. It's so well crafted. So shout out.
I agree. And like I said, I've seen this movie quite a bit of times. I wouldn't say this is my favorite French Extremity movie. And in my opinion, I think this is one of the more tamer French Extremity movies.
Definitely. It was way more tame than I was expecting.
Just
from your initial description of like what I was getting into.
Right. And
a quick runtime.
Very fast.
Quick, yeah.
Very fast.
I cannot believe that.
That was very nice. but with it being one so short and very active. Like, I love that we get our establishments extremely quickly. It's these two people in a house. It's a brand new house. Great. They're still not 100% comfortable in there. And then shit hits the fan and it starts. So I'm enjoying that. I enjoy that aspect of just kind of getting us to the point. It's interesting, though, when with this particular film is the fact that since it is the one that I feel like is least talked about, and I think a lot of it has to deal with the fact that it is probably not as extreme as the majority of French Extremity films that we know. Like, it's not nearly as gory as High Tension. It's not nearly as gory as Martyrs, obviously, Inside, things like that. So, and even I would say even the more modern new French Extremity movies like Titan and Raw and stuff like that, you don't really get this sense of kind of this type of dread of just chase after chase after chase. Some fantastic chase scenes in this movie, like really good chase scenes. So you don't really get that sense of being able to kind of have that aspect in other French Extremity movies versus this one. I feel like you are there for the thrill more than the gore and trying to, I guess, decipher what aspect of the story, how this fits into new French Extremity and whatnot as well. And I would say like an average horror film watcher, they're not doing that anyway. They're just trying to hop in, have a good time, hop out, right? They're not really trying to decipher too much like how we're trying to decipher things and stuff like that, which is completely fine. But it makes for an interesting case with this movie. But y'all ready to jump in?
I'm ready.
Yes. Let's do it.
So ready.
Them, from 2006, directed by Xavier Palud and David Mandrell. Released August 24th, 2007, with a runtime of 1 hour and 17 minutes. Shout the fuck out to this runtime. With a budget of $2.35 million in a box office, which I didn't know this played in theaters, $2.73 million. So they pretty much broke past even, so good for them. We open straight to the title card, overlaid with rain and far thunder, based on true events, is flashed on the screen as a van drives down the road. I did look up the based on true events aspect of this. It turns out that this is not clarified, but there was a murder in the Czech Republic by an Austrian, or from an Austrian couple, and I guess it was three teenagers that supposedly killed them. This was not confirmed.
Very loose.
Right. Very loose. It could be anything. You know, they could have stubbed their toe and then they got gangrene. Who knows? You know what I'm saying?
Teenagers killed somebody at some point in history, probably. So
probably. Who knows? But as we continue, October 6, 2002, 11:47 p.m. A mother, Ilana, and her daughter, Sanda, are in the car when Ilana receives a phone call. She answers the phone, arguing with Sanda's father that she picked her up already, demanding him to speak to her, handing the phone over to her as she checks her eyeshadow. Ignoring her handover, she tells her mom that she's busy. Okay, all right. We're already off to a very blood-boiling start.
Yeah.
A lot of demands to take the phone as Sanda comments that she'll call him back. They start to argue, but Sanda still doesn't take the phone. Ilana requests for him to call them when they get home in 30 minutes. She hangs up the phone, continuing to yell at Sanda. She ignores her mom until Ilana slaps the mirror out of her hand. Sanda comments that she needs help, which breaks Ilana's attention away from the road, wanting her to speak up. She swerves out of the way as someone is standing in the middle of the road. I swear to you, man, if someone is standing in the middle of the road and it's the middle of the night, you are getting hit, bro. You're getting hit. I'm sorry. I'm not swerving. Get out of the road. They hit the pole. She quickly checks on Sanda before hopping out of the car. She inspects the damage. Sanda wonders what she is doing, yelling out of the window. Ilana explains that she saw someone, Sanda considering that it could have been a dog. She gets back in the driver's seat, Sanda wanting to leave now. Ilana tries to start the car, but it won't start. She pops the hood, leaving Sanda in the car. While looking inside the hood of the car, she requests for Sanda to try the engine. She gets into the driver's seat, trying the engine, still nothing. Irritated, she turns the ignition off. Ilana wants her to try again. She does. Still nothing. She wonders what to do next. No answer. She rolls down the window to ask the question yet again. Still no answer. She gets out of the car to see that her mom is no longer there. Confused and unsettled, she calls for her mom, but continues to receive no answer. A clicking from the trees causes her to spring toward the sound. I love the continuation of that, by the way. The clicking of the trees
that and clicking. The reveal of the clicking.
Oh,
the end.
My God.
That was good.
Mm, it was so good. It was really, yes. Really good. When I first saw that, my mind was honestly blown. I was like, wait, what the fuck? Like,
yeah, that got me. That got me. I didn't expect it to be revealed. And when it was shown what it was, which I know we'll get to, was
shocking.
There's no other way to say it, but very good. It was very good.
It's extremely shocking. She walks over toward the trees, still calling for her mom. A male voice whispers, "Mom." She sprints back to the car, quickly rolling the windows back up and locking the car door. Looking around the car, many different noises surround her. The person unlocks the car door. She frantically holds on the lock, trying to force it closed, but they continue doing it. She picks up the phone, popping the battery back in. Oh, the days. She calls the police and she's immediately put on hold. It starts to pour as she starts to sob, looking around the car, startled by someone throwing what looks like mud at the windows. The hood slams shut and the street light overhead goes out. The sound leaves as she hears someone unraveling in the back seat. Using her rearview mirror, she notices someone, but it's too late. They wrap a belt around her neck, strangling her to death as she fights.
And as a car drives by, the car driving by, and like it just doesn't see her, And
she's like pounding on the window. It's such an intense moment where you could sell how much she's struggling, and you're just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
I love this scene. This really sets the stage for what's to come. The beautiful thing about the editing too, there is a great way where they move the camera where you don't get revealed anything. You never see what the threat is. You only hear the threat. Then it starts raining where the threat's right in front of her and she can't do anything about it. Nothing. This is the most isolating scene in this movie by far. You are alone. Your mom is gone. You can't call for help. You can't see what's happening.
Yeah.
And then when you finally do see it, it's already too late. Such a great moment. Terrifying moment, but a good moment.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I completely agree. And you know what this kind of reminds me of? I mean, one, I love when the mom is under the hood, first and foremost. Like, I thought that was fantastic. You can't see her. You can't really know what's going on. These are some quick fucking thinking teens, though. But it's great, though, when you have the context later and you see how they kind of, I guess, terrorize and harass people. It is very childish, right? Throwing mud at the car.
The mud. Like, I loved that.
Throwing rocks at streetlights so it can burst out. Like, it's very childish. It's very smart, but it's very childish how they are harassing and terrorizing these people. So in retrospect, this movie's really, really smart. Yeah. So man. I enjoy this movie a lot. As obviously y'all can see, I've seen it four times. So yeah.
Well, and this first scene sets up I think this is what scares me a lot about home invasion movies. Isn't just the home invasion itself, but it's that so close yet so far feeling of like there are people around, but they can't help you because they can't see you and they just can't see. Which, you know, continues on to the rest of the movie that happens later, and it's just so frustrating and horrifying, like screaming and no one can hear you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It also even comes down to that bystander effect, right? Like, will they help me, you know? Or like, will someone else come and help them? Like, it's just, that's one of my biggest fears is being stuck in a moment where I have like someone, a group of people around with like bystander syndrome. And I'm just like, fucking help me, please. Jesus.
Yeah, can you not just record me on your phone, which is the new bystander syndrome where it's like,
oh my God. Oh, cut to a school. The bell is ringing as the children leave class and run down the hall. October 7th, 2022, 4:32 p.m. A teacher named Clementine is teaching a lesson to her students. After a moment, she dismisses them. She walks down the hall as another teacher stops her. She hands Clementine her last year's curriculum. They briefly discuss the curriculum before she comments that she needs some time to adjust. Her colleague questions how long she's been there. She answers nearly 3 months, and that she would love to speak Romanian as well as she speaks her language. And this is, when I first watched this, I didn't understand that they were both speaking to, they were not French.
Speaking two different languages.
Yeah, like I didn't understand that right away. And when I did watch this when I was pretty young, but when I didn't understand that, I was like, oh, okay, I understand, obviously now, but like I understand that this is extremely foreign for her. This whole place is foreign for her. Like she's not from here.
Because I was confused in the beginning. Again, we talked about before we started recording that I was worried about watching the wrong movie. And when it started, I was like, they're not speaking French. I know enough French to know that they're not. I was like, am I watching the wrong movie? He said this one. And it took me a while to like, I had to read the description again. Like, oh, okay. They're in Romania. Okay.
Even the names, like their names weren't French either. Like Alana and Sanda. Mm-hmm. I'm just like, oh yeah. Yeah, that's not French. No, no way. But it's really cool. Like I feel like we get a lot of films that are in Romania, and it kind of may paint Romania as a little bit of a bad light sometimes. But I've never been there. But all I know about Romania is Hostel, Watcher, and them. Probably not great examples of Romania.
The poor Romanian like tourism like department. It's just like, oh, you guys. Yeah.
I know they were probably so pissed with Eli Roth. Like, they're like, dude, come the fuck on, man. What is your problem? She laughs at her
great hostels here.
She laughs at her French is terrible as they say their goodbyes and go their separate ways. Clementine gets inside of her car, headed home, and seeking out a radio station before turning it off. She calls her husband, Lucas, to discuss what they would like to do tonight. She comes to a point in the road where the police are towing Alana's van from the side of the road. She creeps past it and continues heading home. She makes it to her house, creeping the rickety gate open to park in front of the steps leading to the front door. She places her things down on the coat rack, walking into the kitchen, calling for her husband. She puts the groceries on the table before continuing to look for them. She eventually finds him outside in the greenhouse playing 3D Pinball Space Cadet on his computer. Y'all remember that?
I was so excited to see that. I was like, oh my God, it's that pinball game that it's like I had almost forgotten it existed until I saw that.
It's iconic.
It is so good. Oh my gosh, the best way to pass boredom as a child. She chuckles, grabbing his attention. He promptly closes out of the game to cut back to his writing. They share a smile before he greets her. She giggles as she goes over to give him a kiss. A very silent kiss, by the way. At first I thought my sound went out, and I was just like, there was like no type of smack. I mean, I ain't mad at it. I'm just saying. Usually we hear a little bit of some smackage. He asks about her day. She comments that they were irritating today, which, love the context here of kind of what you said, Shelby, right? Where it's kind of these PSAs of like, don't be mean to your school kids. Don't be mean, you know, like it's don't be mean to your parents. It's this whole kind of concept, which I really, really enjoy. But I'm sure they probably were annoying. Kids are annoying. He's done for the day. She jokes that he's done already. This reminds me a lot of how my relationship was with my wife when she was a teacher, because she would do things like this where she's like, how was it today? And like she would tell me pretty much about her day and how it was with the school kids and things like that. And I feel like that's why this one kind of hits a little close home for me, because my wife was a teacher. But yeah. She's not anymore. She's out of that environment, and it's lovely. He closes his computer, mentioning that even though it's closed, he's still working. He waits for her, asking if she's coming. She comes up to him, kissing him on his neck, wanting to know if he's still working after all of that. And I was like, ooh. They race inside the house. She makes it in the bathroom, locking him out. He knocks on the door to come inside, but she starts to shower, ignoring his request. He puts his computer down and grabs his sweater, leaving out of the room. I love how we get the race inside the house, because it doesn't feel like a race. Like, it starts off pretty scary. Like, you're just like, wait, hold on.
It feels like a chase.
Yeah.
It does. I was thinking the whole time, I was like, is this going to be mirrored later? Because it felt intense.
You know? Yeah.
I love that you brought it up, because I think it does get mirrored pretty well, where he's running back to the door and gets locked out again and tries to get back into a room.
Great point,
Freddie. Major shout out to like the filmmaker in this too. Who's the director again?
Xavier Palud and David Maru.
Because they really flex their filmmaking muscles, because there's so many different type of camera angles. We have still cams. We have long shots through the hallway with the school. We have that little shaky cam with the chase scenes. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit of everything, which keeps the pacing going really fast and very well like entertaining, because there's not much going on. There's not a lot that happens after the opening scene, but you're engaged always. And I do like the relationship. It feels very real.
Oh, this
it feels
felt real.
Very, like,
it does.
Playful.
Yeah. It felt it very feels lived
like
that. In. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, maybe they like feel like they just started dating or became a lot more serious or whatever, but this is still in their like playful stage, which is like, I love to see it. And hopefully that stage stays forever. But man, the filmmaking is the thing that really wows me. And you know me, Prince, I love my continuous shots. So when I saw that,
got a lot of them in here.
I was like, fuck, that's so great. Great set design. I love the house. The house layout is actually terrifying, because there's so
incredible.
Many.
It's like an old chateau or something.
Yeah.
It's so many layers. The
greenhouse was amazing.
And I like the aspect of the house also not being finished as well. Like, like you can tell that they're scarier. Still working on it. Yeah. Like they barely had furniture. They, you know, they had like a two-box TV. Like they didn't really have much of anything there. And you could tell that like they were just kind of trying to start their life here.
They're trying to build their home.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Cut to the couple eating dinner. Luke is wanting to know Clementine's thoughts on his prepared meal. She claims that it's delicious, calling it unusual and interesting. He's slightly offended as they continue discussing the food before he gets upset and dumps it in the sink. Damn, Bettina, all right. Red flag. She laughs.
That was awkward. It was so weird. They did so good that I felt like, have you ever been at dinner when a couple starts fighting and you're just kind of like
that secondhand embarrassment?
I like got that feeling. They had such good chemistry that they even had good like fighty chemistry.
Yeah, like their banter together was like really, really solid.
Feels and it
was
just real. Like, I told you red wine, not white wine. What the fuck? Do you even listen to me?
She laughs at his reaction as he continues. After dinner, they are on the couch watching TV. She's trying to ensure that he's not falling asleep. A dog starts barking outside. It's it being Lucas' turn to go outside for the dog. He doesn't get up right away due to his fatigue. This was interesting too. Like the dog, when I first watched it, I thought it was like their dog, and they just leave it outside. I was like, that's a lot of space.
Yeah, because when he went outside and started like whistling for it, I was like, is that your dog? Don't just leave it out there.
Nope, just a stray. Outside, he calls for the barking dog, whistling as he trails his property. The stray finally runs up to him. He gives the dog some food before telling it to go. He goes back inside the house, locking the door before telling Clementine that it's time for them to go to bed. You know what he means. He slightly moves, or... Oh, crap. I missed my spot. See, I joke too much. he seductively gets on top of her. They playfully ask each other if they're sleepy. They roll off the couch making out. The rain is pattering outside. Clementine rubs Lucas's back as he's asleep. He slightly moves and she whispers that she's going downstairs to work a bit more. She sneaks out of the room, softly closing the door. While she's downstairs, she's grading some papers. The phone rings. She answers it. Someone picks up the line, making some strange noises. She calls out to them, asking who's on the phone before hanging it up. She grabs a large bottle of water and turns off the lights to head upstairs. Cut to Clementine resting in a bath in the dark. She gets ready for bed, lying down next to her husband. This was interesting because at first we don't know how late it is, but it seems pretty late.
Right.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's pretty late. If I could take a guess, I would say it's like midnight, almost something around that time frame. But once again, going to the characteristics of children playing pranks or whatever on people, the phone call, right? It's very much like a ding dong ditch type of situation, phone call. And I love the aspect as we don't get the why ever.
Well, and then again, that was when she was sitting on the couch grading the papers. She says some mean stuff about the papers. I can't remember exactly what she says, but she says something about how stupid the kids are or something.
Yeah, she does. She does. Yeah, yeah. Which is interesting because it's like, I assume she's a French teacher. I assume that's what she is because she's not, her Romanian's not good or whatever. But it's just like, okay, if you're a French teacher, like, can't you cut them some slack? Like,
right.
Like, you know, you just said like a few hours earlier that your Romanian's pretty bad. And I would assume their French is pretty bad. So it's just like, okay. Do I have to be an asshole? Stroking his head before turning out her light to stare at the silhouette behind the sheer curtain. She finally closes her eyes to fall asleep. She wakes up out of her sleep to sound of music playing outside. She checks the time. It's 3:46 a.m. She gets up to check outside the window to see where the music is playing from. There's nothing outside their window, but she's concerned, mainly because she probably doesn't see her car, right? Sitting back in bed to wake up Lucas, the music stops. She whispers for him to wake up. He groans for her attention. She turns the light on his side to wake him up faster. He rubs his eyes, wondering what's going on. She questions if he heard the noises outside, but he didn't. She gets up to put on some more clothes, wanting them to go check where the music came from. You know what? I think this is a very clear thing to say right now. One of the smartest decisions in a horror movie right here is when you're getting out of bed and you just kind of, you knowing that you're going to have to probably investigate something, you put on shoes.
Put on
shoes. Smartest thing. Like,
put on shoes.
Put on shoes. Like, you know, have some shoes by your door. I don't know if this is a Californian thing because we got earthquakes. So, like, a lot of us do keep our shoes pretty close. Yep. So, you know, we might have to jet outside of a house or two. But two houses? Why did I say that? But, yeah.
All of our houses we
All
have.
All of our houses that we have here in California. They are walking down the hallway. Clementine goes in one direction before Lucas calls her back to follow him. They make it downstairs. She looks out of the window. I also love that he took her serious.
Yeah.
That's another great thing that was a fantastic aspect of not giving us the normal trope. And this might be the fact that they're French.
Yeah, none of this, like, go back to sleep. It's fine.
Right, it's nothing.
Just find a dog outside.
Whatever. Yeah, like, maybe you were dreaming it or whatever. Like, he didn't do any of that shit. He believed her right away, and he went to investigate with her. It's just like, okay, if you're going to go investigate, I'm also going to go with you kind of thing. even if you're making me, it doesn't matter. Like, I'm going to do this with you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he also does put on his shoes, too. So put your shoes
shout
on.
Shout out.
Shout out to putting your shoes on.
Shout out shoes.
Shout out to shoes. Not sponsored. He puts on his shoes to head outside. She is peeking through their small window up on the door. He opens it. She gets scared and closes it. He comments about her being silly and that he's going to go check, instructing her to stay there. He heads outside in the rain, calling out to anyone being outside. Nobody answers, but he continues walking down the steps in search of someone that may be out there. He inches closer toward her car until her headlights come on. Clementine yells for him to come back as the car lurches forward toward him. He covers his eyes from the blinding headlights. The person drives off with Clementine's car. He chases after them to come back, but they drive off. Cut to her on the phone with the police explaining what just happened. Lucas calls out that they'll deal with it in the morning, but she continues questioning them. She finally agrees to speak with them tomorrow, sitting down in defeat, feeling disappointed that she left everything inside of her car. He comes over to comfort her as she lights a cigarette. Yeah, don't leave stuff in your car, folks. Even if it's in your garage, take your shit out. That's all I'm going to say. Their power cuts off. He gets up, telling her to come with him to flip the switch on the meter. I also want to point out, they don't like doing stuff by themselves. I like that.
Good. Stay together.
I like that. Stay together. Stick around. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was just like, I got to turn the meter on. I need you to come with me. We're going to turn this meter on together. You know what I'm saying? I love that.
I think the only dangerous thing he did was run after the car. I was like, don't go into the darkness. What are you doing?
Oh, yeah. No, that was definitely dumb. But yeah, don't do that.
He's brave. I'll give him that, though. He's a very brave person.
Oh,
love
yeah.
The brave. Actions he does in this movie, I'm like, no, fuck that. I'm staying in this bedroom. We'll talk about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree. They walk through the darkness of the house. He lights his lighter as their source of light. They make it to the breakers. He flips the switch, but nothing happens. While he's doing so, Clementine notices the flashing of the lights out coming from outside their home. She moves toward the stairs, calling for Lucas to come see. He follows her up the stairs. They finally realize that someone else is inside their home. They duck for cover before Lucas goes to check it out. He checks outside the window on the door, not seeing anyone until someone with a flashlight bangs on the door. They sprint back into the living room. He tries for the phone, but the line is dead. I mean, power's out. Quickly checking the window in the kitchen before coming back, the intruders start slamming their outside shutters, darkening their home further. Fucking dude. The shutters being on the outside of the house is phenomenal nightmare fuel. Oh my God. Like, that, to me, that was just, and that's very European, right? Like, you don't see shit like that. Like, we have them here, but they're usually stuck on the wall. You can't close them. It's mainly for decoration. Right. But
it reminds me of Beauty and the Beast with all the townspeople opening their shutters. And that
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's what I think of.
Which is also a French extremity film.
It is.
A creature feature. A love story.
Creature. I mean, hey, quick tangent. If you really think about it, when Belle goes into that room and all of the furniture's messed up.
Yeah.
Weren't those horrifying people once?
They were. Mm-hmm. That's very like Cronenberg. You're turned into furniture. Like,
come on, man.
Do they
I'm
feel?
Telling you.
Anyway.
Especially be our guest. Messed up.
The couple runs upstairs trying to spot any of them out there upstairs window. Clementine notices someone running behind on the structure. She calls that out to Lucas. They continue running to their bedroom. I think this is the point too when she realizes, like, holy fuck, there's multiple of them. Like, what do we do? What do we do? It's time to nut up or shut up. But I'm telling you, if I would have figured out, like, in that moment and found out that, like, oh, this is who this is doing this, it would have been on site easily.
Yeah.
I'd be like, all right, now, you know what? Fuck this. I don't give a shit who you are. It's going down. It is going down. She immediately locks the door behind them as he goes to check out the window. Their eyes dart around the room as they quietly listen to the noises from the intruders entering inside their home. The stray begins barking again, which has Lucas cautiously go back to check the window. The intruder flashes their light at him, finding their position. He quickly moves away from the window, hiding himself and Clementine behind their nightstand. The sound of the stray barking ceases.
I know. I knew they were going to do that too. I just knew.
Yeah.
Also, why did he go to the window to check? That was like one of the few dumb things he did. It was like, what are you doing?
What are you doing?
Why?
What are you doing? They know where you are. You're like stumping around and slamming doors and shit.
Yeah.
as the couple tries to figure out their next steps, they are startled as the power cuts back on and sounds off their alarm clock. I was very curious how they did this. So I looked up like where multiple, I guess, of their like power supplies are. I guess in Europe, there are different sections where they have their breakers. So then it's like multiple breakers, I guess, in some places. I don't know. I didn't look that hard. I just like double checked, like, how did they do that? Like, how did they turn it off and turn it back on?
Even for those old homes being built upon that are like 200-300 years old, and you start building on wings and adding electricity. So it's like, I guess put the breaker over here and then put the new one over there. And
So I guess that's what it kind of is. I don't know, but I guess that's like a thing. Apparently, I don't know. Once again,
all your European listeners are like, you stupid Americans. Like, why are you?
Yeah. You're like, fucking generators. Like, come on. Lucas, please, if someone can explain this to us, like, real talk, if someone can explain this to us, like, maybe in our Spotify comments or something, like, please do. Because I would love to,
I'll be here
like,
for a few more weeks.
This.
So I'll even be here to. So please, before I'm gone, let me know. Let us know about the breakers.
It's not like we have Google and stuff, but like, you know, it's more fun when other people tell us that have experience with this kind of stuff. Lucas slams it off and pushes it away, trying to assure her that it'll be okay. This was actually very fucking startling, I'm not gonna lie. She cries that they're inside the house. He shakes his head, deciding to get up and go check downstairs. Lucas unlocks the door, creaking it loudly as he opens it and cautiously checking his surroundings. He instructs her to close the door. She tries to close it and lock it, having a hard time until she slams the door and locks it. By the way, folks, if you're ever opening the door and it's super creaky, open it faster so it doesn't creak as much. Just saying.
That's better.
I don't know. Who knows? He walks down the hallway. The TV is on downstairs as he turns the corner and creeps down the steps. He goes inside the dark living room where the TV is playing. He looks around the room and as he approaches the TV, turning it off. She left it on. Now they know where you are yet again. With the fire poker as a weapon, he continues searching for any of the intruders that may be inside his home. The sound of water inside the bathroom bangs on the pipes. He forces himself into the bathroom, nobody inside as the water runs from the faucet. Which, it's funny because it almost felt like, oh, I didn't know the power turns on the water too. But like, it should have been like, you should have been more ready, I feel like. I don't know. I mean, he does check behind the shower curtain, but I don't know. I feel like I would have been
more prepared.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. I feel like I would have been like going crazy at this point.
Be like, I'd be like hitting the shit on the wall, be like, exactly. All right, anyone's fucking in here, I'll beat your ass. Yeah. Like, you know, some random shit, yeah.
Always the first line to know that someone will whoop your ass instead, right?
He's brave as fuck, but quiet as fuck. I'm like, why?
I know.
Be loud.
Yeah.
You gotta, like, out crazy him. I will eat your faces. I will eat you. Like, something. Like,
I will rip off your nose and send it to your mother. Like, it's just something to, like, really classify that,
like,
you're
crazy. Yes. Another intruder. Another kill for me. Like, some weird shit. Like, oh, this is my game. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I feel like if you have home advantage, right, even though if you've been there for only 3 months, I try to learn new places that I live in for at least the first week. Yep. If I can't walk my house, exactly. If you can't walk your house and it's like dark and you can't maneuver inside your home, you're doing it wrong, right? Like, you're doing it wrong. You got home field advantage. You need to know where all your shit is so you know what to do. So that's what I'm saying. That's why I love these home invasion movies. It's just like, oh, I didn't think about having one of those inside that location. We're going to put one there now. Got it. As soon as he checks behind the shower curtain, the lights cut back off and the sound of footsteps run away. He goes back inside the living room, the TV back on, but only showing static. Someone runs behind him. He swings in that direction, connecting with a picture frame. The shattered glass startles Clementine upstairs. She yells for him, checking on him. He looks toward her direction. One of the intruders violently tries to open the door. She rips out the door handle. Nice. Meanwhile, Lucas gets one of the French doors smashed into his hand and backside, stabbing him with the broken glass and disarming him. God damn!
I had to rewind that part a couple times. I was like, how did he hurt his leg? It was dark and there was glass. And I was confused about how he got so injured. I was.
I literally think like when the glass hit him, it just stuck into his leg.
Shattered into him. Yeah.
Although I'm like, bro, pick up the fire poker again. Like, I get it. You're hurt. But you got you got another hand. Like, I'm just saying. Now's the time. He shrieks in pain. Clementine calls for him as he limps back toward the stairs. She checks through the hole from the missing door handle. Nobody is there, but she can hear Lucas coming upstairs. Someone pokes a screwdriver through the door. Oh, my God. Through the hole, almost hitting her in the eye. She jolts back, checking her cheek to make sure that her eye wasn't hit. But it did hit her. Like, it connected. It got her cheek.
For sure, reflexes.
Oh, my God. Lucas makes it back to the door, banging on the door for Clementine to open it up. She yells that it's jammed as she continues trying to get the door open. He looks behind his back, trying to ensure that nobody is following up, but he knows that they're close by. She gets the door open, the intruder standing there with their hood on, watching them from down the hall. She checks on him, wondering what they did to him. The intruders are running around inside their house, but the couple try to ignore them. Lucas wants her to pull the shard of glass out of his leg. The sound of something mechanical startles them and heightens their anxiety. As she tries to pull out the shard, he screams in pain. She lets go. He yells for her to do it. She amps herself up by the overstimulating sanctuary turned hell. This is great. She pulls it out, putting her long sleeve around the wound, demanding him to put pressure on it. She picks him up and helps him to the bathroom as they bang on the door to their room to get inside. She pulls a stand to block the door. They bang for a moment longer before falling to a halt. Clementine opens up the attic, checking inside to ensure that nobody is inside there. She quickly comes back down, letting Lucas know that she'll look for a way out. She hops inside the... See, once again, know your fucking exits, people. You've been here for 3 months. What do you mean I'll look for a way out? No. You should be like, you know, there's a way out upstairs inside the attic. We can go from up... Come on, bro. Come on. She hops inside the attic very loudly, running from window to window to check for any more intruders. What are you doing? God damn. So I just learned that just French people just aren't silent with their feet. That's just, you know.
They're heavy-footed people.
They're just very heavy-footed people. Sorry to the French. We have a listener named Sebastian. I think he lives in Sweden, but he's French. And it's funny because he does some great corrections when we talk about French films, so I'm sure we're going to get a lot of
corrections. We are not a heavy-footed people, thank you.
I cannot wait for that.
How dare you?
How fucking dare you? We do love shoes.
We are actually very light on our feet. Thank you.
He did tell me about a new horror film out, or coming out, I guess, soon for us, but it was out for them, and it's called Vermins, and it's about... It's like one of the most intense spider movies out right now, so I cannot wait to check that out. Yeah, very excited about that. Anyway, she doesn't see any and finally decides to open the window. Lucas calls for her. She runs back toward his direction, but hears the winding sound again. She quiets down. Crawling underneath the table as Lucas continues calling for her, the intruder walks toward her, throwing the chairs and flipping the table. She makes a run for it, jumping out of the window that she opened. Quickly checking to see if the man is following her, she continues moving inside another portion of the attic. Walking through plastic curtains, she spins around when she hears the mechanical whining that noise again. Not able to find its location, she continues pushing through the plastic, stopping for a moment to look around. The intruder starts hitting through the curtain with a 2x4. She screams and runs, hearing footsteps quickly recede, causing her to stop and focus on where this person may be again. About to head for the window, but stops when she hears the flicking of the curtain. She spins in that direction, slowly turning around to the man standing there. He is about to grab for her, but she's able to fight him off quick enough, causing him to fall off of the house. Another man checks on him and quickly asks her if she took a message from our sponsor. And we're back. He doesn't ask her shit, actually. Instead, he actually just starts chasing after her, immediately climbing up the trellis and walking up towards the attic. I was like, dude, that is scary as fuck. If someone had the gall to be like, to want to get to me that badly, to that they're climbing up my trellis and ladders and makeshift structures, at that point, I'm just like, damn, dude, I think you could just take me.
Take a beat to like mourn fellow whoever, you know, like,
no,
just pure,
just look
rage.
Down and just like,
like, no way, like, you just
stroll
did that.
Up,
yeah. Ugh. And again, great set design too. The whole curtains and like see-through stuff.
I love a
so
good plastic
well.
Curtains like set.
Oh, I love
and
that.
And knowing it's like a new house and they're still fitting in, it still makes sense. It's a little bit of a cliche, but it still works so well.
Yeah.
It's one of those scenes where it builds a lot of tension. It's great.
Yeah. Absolutely. Clementine makes a run for it back inside the attic. She takes the time to close the window, calling for Lucas to hurry up and get up. She drops down into the tub. The intruder smashes the window to head inside. The couple leaves out of the bathroom, quickly turning into another room because another intruder is running in their direction. They hide, allowing him to pass before they quickly rush down the stairs. They make it in front of the door. Clementine takes the key out from the other side of the door, locking it on that side. Fucking smart as hell. Goddamn. But I guess it doesn't really matter that much because instead, the intruder makes it to the door, banging on it as Lucas grabs her to keep running. They run with a limp away from the place where they should be the safest into the woods, but their window is open as the intruders come fleeing outside, flashing their lights in their direction as they continue running, making animalistic screeches as they run, taunting them as they continue to move. They stumble and struggle as the set of intruders screech and run toward them, finally able to gather a good momentum, but it isn't enough as they are right behind them. Finding a large set of brush, they get down. Lucas breathing loud and rapidly. Shut the fuck up, Lucas. They wait until they pass before continuing forward, finding a gate to climb. He assists Clementine over it, then tries. Oh, this is great.
This scene.
All of this right here is impeccably well done. This is what I wanted Lucas to do. Act crazy. Because obviously it fucking works. It was running for their life. But when they're doing these screeches and kind of this cat and mouse game, right? You can tell they're having fun.
Yeah, they're having fun doing this. Very Lord of the Flies type of thing.
Yes, right, exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
They love the hunt, and that's terrifying. And like, again, the camera work with the shaky cam and following in front of them and clipping back to the people behind them and seeing the flashlights. Also great lighting in this movie. It's really cool.
I didn't feel like I couldn't anything, but it was still very dark.
Yeah. Very well done.
Yeah.
Right. Like, we could tell it's nighttime, but we could still see what's going on. So the lighting was very, very well used in this movie.
This moment feels so chaotic and so scary, and you feel like they are running for their lives.
And it's heartbreaking. It's just, ugh.
It makes me feel like,
it really is.
Watching this for the first time, I was like, I don't know if you're safer out there or in the house. Like, I honestly don't know about your odds now.
Yes, because there was that immediate, at first it's like this relief of like they're out of the house, but then it's like, they're
is that
in the
good?
Woods too.
Right.
And now they're in the woods.
Yeah.
Like,
is that a good thing?
You don't really want to be in the woods, you know?
We get this great establishing shot of how far she drives out to this house too and how isolated this house is.
Yes.
And that's also a scary factor. It's like, man, it's always good to have neighbors around.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Especially with this kind of instance, it's just like, you're surrounded by nothing. Nothing is around to help
you. Movies like this make me realize the moments where I'm like, I just want to live in a cabin in the woods. That's not really what I want to do. I need a couple neighbors.
I need someone close by. Even if we don't know each other, I need someone to be like, hey, I heard screaming in this house. Let's call the cops. Like, you know, someone.
A lifeline.
You know
what
I'm saying? Like, that's it. That's all I want. Ugh. But his wound is so intense, he falls back on the ground as he tries to climb the gate again. She cries for him to try again. He demands her to just keep running, leaving him behind so that she can at least get away. She hesitates as she runs away. The lights head in his direction, and he hides back inside the brush. Meanwhile, Clementine continues running through the wooded area, looking back to see the lights are walking in her direction. She decides to hide behind a tree. The light disappears as she's distracted by the sounds of animals. Someone runs behind her. Her head darts in that direction, but she's not able to see them. She continues looking around for them as many different sounds forces her head to dart in those directions. The panic eventually sets in and she frantically starts making another run for it, slowing down when she spots her car initially parked there. She approaches her car, branches continuing to snap behind her. She hops inside the car, frantically searching for the keys to the car. So frantic, in fact, that she turned on the wipers and hazard lights, exposing her. I felt so bad for them.
I know.
They did not have any of this on their side. The movie. You know
it.
What I'm saying?
Said it.
Oh, them. No,
them. Yep.
Oh, them.
The mechanical winding catches her attention. When she looks up, the intruder is standing there watching her. That
such a good
is
reveal.
Very yeah. well done. And I love how they did this because I feel like I have to give it away in order to necessarily say what's kind of going on, but it's about to happen in just a second, so I'll wait. Cut to Lucas still following the path to the gate, hoping for an opening toward the other side. He hears his wife shriek in the distance. He runs over toward that direction, making it to the road in time to watch them drive her away. He yells for her as they take her away. He follows her screams, eventually finding the car parked down the road. He picks up a large branch on the ground as he continues to limp toward the car, looking inside to see that nobody is in there. He hears a twig snap and dips behind the car, finding his opportunity. He springs out and beats the man/kid with the club. Getting up, wanting for him to move, he drops the club for the fire poker that was taken from him, kicking him over to reveal that it's just a fucking kid. Very well done to make these children seem like they're goddamn giants. But I also feel like kids are getting taller.
Kids
as
these days.
I feel like I'm getting smaller. Okay.
Must be
you know
nice.
What I'm saying? Kids these days. I have a cousin who is 15 and that kid is 6'3".
Yeah, I have two cousins who are 16 and they're like 6'3", 6'4". And it's
that's
like
crazy.
Is it something in the milk?
That's
I don't
wild.
Know what's happening.
Are they eating?
You know what?
Is it just milk?
You know what? 5'8" is the perfect height. Just, I don't know why. Just putting it out there. Yeah.
Yeah, 5'8" and a half on a good day. All right, Freddie. This revelation causes him to lose his strength for a well-deserved double tap. Nah, it would have went down still. I'd be like, oh, it's a kid? It's fucking over. I'm about to
kill
everybody
all these
kids. Right
I'm going to kill him so hard. Oh, man. Like,
I'm going
that's
to win.
Like, stand up and be like, it's time to put him on timeout. And then start it becomes a completely different movie. It's Rambo. It's just him murdering these kids in the forest.
Dude, he just has a gun somehow now.
I swear. Like, it, I would have been so fucking confident in this moment after turning him over and like, oh, it's a kid?
Hold on. Just yelling into the forest.
Start
hey,
the music.
Honey, it's just kids. Just kick them.
It's just kids.
She's off on the other side. She's like, I know, I fucked one up. And there's another kid dead on the ground. It's like, we got this. And they high-five each other and hop in the forest, start killing kids.
I had a dream where I had to fight a group of children as a grown man. And not a group of children as in like teenagers like this. They were literally like 5 or 6 year olds. And I had theme music playing as I was fighting these kids. The song, I forgot the name of the song, but it is an actual song. It's on Tony Hawk Pro Skater. And it is and I'm in here just swinging at these kids to the beat of the song, and I'm just like, every single time, like, it's just when I see shit like
was
this,
it
I'm
like
yeah,
that movie
fuck
Cooties where they were all like,
that's exactly what I was thinking about. I was literally thinking about that movie.
They were not feral. They were just kids. He hears Clementine scream below him. He finds an entrance. I don't know what this says about me. I'm sorry. He finds an entrance into the sewer and heads down there. Flicking on his lighter, he moves inside the damp tunnels in search for her. Lucas hears her faint cries echoing inside the tunnel. He follows them, turning his lighter off when the lights inside the tunnel turn back on. Moving down the hall, turning in another direction when he hears her screams coming from a different hallway. He limps deeper into the labyrinth as he's forced to hear his wife's screams. Finally finding her with a kid on her back, forcing a bag over her mouth, another kid is telling him that she can't breathe and for him to stop. Fucking genius move from this kid,
really,
though.
Was.
Just like going with the truss
man.
Line.
He's like, you're
just
hurting
like,
her! You're hurting her!
Very yeah. believable, too. It was just like, oh, shit, like, yeah, this kid has my back, you know, ride or die. I guess it's die. But he doesn't, causing her to cough and gag from the lack of oxygen. The other kid demands that he lets her go until Lucas comes up and swings the poker at him, hitting him directly in the chest. They're about to leave, but there are more of them coming from that direction. I would have fucking
Again,
knuckled
you know
up, dude.
Fucking
I swear
kids
to God.
Now. Like, come on.
Like I would have knuckled up. It would have been done deal. I'm sorry. Like, it would have been a done deal, but had the poker and start swinging. That's what I'm saying, man. The kid was demanding the suffocator, and just going to, at this point, make up my own word. I don't think suffocator is a real word, but it sounds like a
wrestling name.
The suffocator, here at 8 p.m. SmackDown on Live. To get off of her emotions for them to follow him, Lucas can't decide until Clementine agrees to follow him. They keep moving down through the tunnels, the others falling close behind, eventually coming through an opening that reveals that it is now daylight. Mm. Clementine climbs up the ladder first. She continues moving, but turns around when she hears commotion behind her. She finds that the kid that was helping them is now stepping on her husband's hand, causing him to fall off the ladder.
I would have grabbed his ankle. I wanted him to grab his ankle so bad.
I swear to God, dude.
You're stronger than him.
None of this. Hey, stop, kid. No, that would not have happened to me. I'm swearing to you. Now I feel like all kids are just going to kill us. He weakly calls for Clementine, but it is then dragged off by another boy. The kid continues climbing up. She moves deeper into the tunnel to try to get away. I swear, dude, if I would have just turned around and
kicked
him in
the face.
100%. I'm just saying. You have the high ground.
You do. Like,
it didn't work out for Anakin. It won't work out for him. Come on.
Exactly. You know? She picks up a large rock. The kid whimpers for her not to hurt
him. Oh, that part
made me so
mad.
He just wanted to play.
We just wanted to play. Don't make us stop playing. Oh, I would have smashed his face like so many times. It would have just been kid paste.
Oh my God.
Sorry.
You got some kids, huh?
I mean, if you haven't learned anything from this show, is keep your kids away from us. Questioning if she will allow them to, she waits for a moment, nodding her head before chucking the rock at his head. He dodges it, whispering for the other kids and revealing her position. Didn't even know why he had to do all that. Like, it was only one direction. The kids all yell for her as they chase her deeper and deeper inside the tunnel.
And she's crouching.
She makes it to another ladder. Yeah, I know. She makes it to another tunnel, or another ladder, excuse me, frantically crawling toward an opening. But she's met with just bars. She cries and reaches out toward the passing cars, none of them slowing down or noticing her as the kids drag her back inside. And one of my favorite scenes right here. Cut to scenes of the still and calm forest as four kids emerge from the forest, spinning their mechanical toy, as revealing that being the winding toy that we heard earlier, as they walk to the road to catch their school bus.
Mm.
Like, it was
Fuck,
such a good...
dude. That...
Beautiful.
Oh my God. I have...
And
literal
the direction,
right now.
Clearly, that the director had kind of directed them to be more adult-like the whole movie. And then in the end, it was like,
yeah.
You're just kids. They're like bouncing
you're
around.
Kids.
They're
you're
like
just kids.
Having
laughing.
Fun.
One was skipping. Like, it's just, they like, what the fuck, dude? Like, it's so well done on how they were able to perceive these children to be so menacing, yet still innocent. Like, it's just, the movie that I think of that didn't do this at all, actually, was Eden Lake. Eden Lake didn't have this type of characteristic. Like, they just seemed like menacing monsters. Children who looked like they were going to kill you. Yeah, absolutely. And once again, those kids were like actually legit.
Yeah, yeah. They were scary kids.
They were scary kids.
I'd rather try to survive these kids than those kids for sure.
Same.
Oh, for sure. I still would have tried, though. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. If I was Michael Fassbender in that movie, I still would have tried to fuck that kid up. I ain't going to lie. Like, yeah, still, I would have.
Yeah, you dream about this.
You literally dream about this. Yeah.
I do.
Like, I wish
I
this
do
was
literally
me.
Dream about this.
Put me in.
It's just, you know, I'm just saying, if a kid wants to step up. No children were harmed in the filming of the Nightlight Horror Movie Podcast. 5 days after the events, the bodies of Clementine and Lucas were found by the police. After the investigation, the murderers were arrested in the Sangov region. They were between the ages of 10 and 15. During the first interrogation, the youngest amongst them declared, "They wouldn't play with us."
Such a scary line.
Then, credits.
You know,
Jesus
the
Christ,
creepiest part about that
short.
One shot with them going towards the bus, I thought about it after I would watch it, like hours after I'd watch it. I was like, it's not just the terrifying thought that they were acting childlike and getting on the bus after killing these people. It's that also their friends were murdered. Like, not only were they just killing people, but like
no remorse
for anyone. Like, nothing, like no feelings for like the fact that they lost like what, at least two, three of their friends or murdered, or died because they were trying to murder, and it's like nothing for them either, you know?
Yeah.
Oof.
Literally didn't feel an ounce of any of that. You know what this reminds me of? I'm Shelby, you may have read this book, actually. Freddie, I'm not too sure if you've heard of it, but it's called The Troop.
Oh, I have not read it, but it's on my list, and
okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. There is a kid in that story that is very much like zero remorse, psychotic as fuck, sociopath, like Jesus Christ. So it reminded me a lot of that character in that book, who I think his name was Shelley, but it was pretty damn close to what these kids were doing. But anyway, I got some movie facts for us here.
Movie facts?
Okay. Now, there are some interesting facts with this movie. One about the star Olivia. Olivia Bonomi suffered from claustrophobia, and much of her performance as she crawled through the narrow tunnels was the result of her genuine fear of the tight spaces. God.
Poor lady.
Oh my
Damn,
God.
That sucks.
The house used in the film was an actual sprawling old estate in Romania. The house was so large that the production was unable to furnish all the rooms for shooting. I mean, it didn't look like you furnished any of
it. Yeah, it looked like there was a couch and a TV and a bed, and that's right. All I saw.
And a dining room
table. Yeah.
They don't really explore any of the other rooms, too. They're like, we'll leave it empty. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah. It was just like, yeah. But it was also large enough that the entire production worked out of the location.
That's cool.
Pretty great. This was the main inspiration for the movies The Strangers that came out in 2008. As a promotional gimmick, the official website for the film ran a mock news interview where a woman who was supposed to be Clementine's sister pleaded for the safe return of her missing sister and Lucas. That one's kind of gross, only because if it's supposed to be based on a true story.
I love viral marketing, but that is, yeah.
Yeah. Based on a true story. Pretend it's actually a real story. But it was. Yeah, but marketing-wise, we're going to make it like a real story. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I'll just do the last one. This is it. This film was shot in 30 days.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
I could see that. Sweet. Not even in a bad way. Not bad. It was.
It was to the point.
It was.
And I also could see them having a lot of issues with probably stuff going on in this estate. So, can't blame them.
Like ghosts? But,
ooh.
Probably.
Mold estate.
Probably. It looks like they would be there, if anywhere. Right? Definitely looks like it. But we definitely want to keep this conversation going, and you can do so by heading over to our Discord. It's probably our quickest episode in a long time.
Very short movie.
Very short movie. The next movie we are covering is not going to be as short. Probably going
to
be a pretty
be
long
a lot
conversation.
To say. There's a lot to say.
To say. Yes. And we're watching the German version, so even more to say. But You can head over to our Discord inside of our show notes, or on our Instagram or our Twitter, also inside of our show notes, and you can go ahead and reach out to us over there and discuss what you love about this movie, what you hate about this movie, whatever. Let's go ahead and just talk about this movie, because I want to keep this conversation going. But the next film that we are going to be covering with Shelby yet again is Funny Games, specifically 1997, the German version. Very excited for this. Haven't had an opportunity to watch this movie in quite a while.
First time watch for me.
Me too.
Oh my.
I'm scared. Because I've heard of this
one. I mean, to be fair, to be honest, it does. And I've read the plot synopsis several times in my life, but I haven't actually watched it. So
I'm going to go in so completely blind and see what happens.
Excited. Next week it's just Freddie and I just being silent the whole time. Just.
Oh, you're saying I should do my so therapy excited. Session before this movie.
I was just going to say, does after. Anybody have a therapist they can bring on to the show? We can just...
Me.
You know what? I cannot wait. I am so very excited for this. This is going to be probably the best recording of my life. That's all I'm going
to
say.
Wow. I'm excited.
But
it is funny. Just behind the scenes is Prince, when you told me about, like, you were like, here's all the episodes. And it was like 2 days later, you were like, I probably should have asked you if it was okay if we did these movies.
I realized later, I was like, God, I chose a lot of extreme films. I should have probably double checked to make sure was okay
it's fine.
You first.
You did choose very extreme films, but yeah, it's okay.
I did.
I'll be strong. I did. It's going to be a month.
I'll be strong.
It'll be quite the month.
Nightlight has caused me to go into therapy, but this was Nightlight, a horror movie podcast. I was one of your hosts, Prince, also known as Head Knight. Alongside me, we had Freddie,
always keeping it spoopy,
always and forever, also known as Nighty Night, and we also had Shelby as well. Which thank you so much. Can't wait for you to continue with us for the rest of this month.
So excited.
With your help, we can reach more Ghoulish Nights with your recommendation to someone who would actually enjoy the show. If your podcast app allows you to rate our show, consider giving us a 5-star rating, as it honestly does help us out a ton. For extra horror related content, head over to patreon.com/nightlightpod. That's night with a what?
Okay.
And remember, everybody, don't forget your nightlight.